really believe that curiosity is a mental, emotional, and motivational system. It's a process. We almost have to think of curiosity as a verb.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity, and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hi there.
And we're delighted to be joined by Alison Horsemeyer. Dr. Alison Horsemeyer is a talent development consultant, executive coach, humanistic researcher, and founder at Intrinsic Curiosity. Her research focuses on curiosity and associated mental, emotional, and motivational attributes. Alison is considered one of the pioneering scholar practitioners on workplace curiosity. Her work is published in various peer-reviewed journals and business publications, including Forbes, Chief Learning Officer, and CEO World Magazine. She regularly works with clients focused on multifaceted and agile leadership, healthy team dynamics, and continuous innovation. Examples of those organizations that she's worked with include Hulu, Verizon Media, Vanguard, and Stanford Healthcare. Also, in addition to her consulting practice, she serves as the Director of Client Development and Adjunct Faculty for USC Marshall School of Business Executive Education, and she's the inaugural research fellow appointed to the USC Annenberg Center for Third Space Thinking, contributing empirical rigor and thought leadership to soft skills development. She believes curiosity is innate in each one of us. We just tend to stifle it away. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more on that shortly. Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Alison.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you with us. So to kick things off, Alison, you focused your research, writings, and work on curiosity. How did you come to be curious about curiosity?
It's a great question. So when I was in my corporate world, I built businesses at the intersection of tech and media, usually global purview, and had the opportunity to work with, you know, international sales teams and cross-functional teams. And I was always fascinated on the different ways as leaders we showed up, you know, why some leaders ran their team on fear while others didn't. And I also noticed a high level of stress, anxiety, and complacency around me. And I really wanted to do something about it. And I kind of always knew I would go back to the corporate world in a different incarnation. I just wasn't sure what that was going to be. And so I went back to school and dived into mind-body science, behavioral science, social science, and different modalities and disciplines. And along the way, I became a certified coach and certified yoga teacher. And it was actually my mindfulness research that I was, I had this idea, you know, could you be curious and anxious all at the same time? And I was like, oh, maybe that's it. That was incredibly naive. But it did lead me down this beautiful, rich, non-linear journey into the world of curiosity, only to come back to anxiety in a different way, because anxiety is so indelibly part of curiosity. And I'm just fascinated in terms of how we build that stress tolerance to manage that, to really enliven and support our states of curiosity.
Alison, could we talk about that a little more? I know you've looked extensively at the links between anxiety and fear and curiosity. And when we were speaking with people, and often when we are talking, one of the questions we get asked is, how can I be curious if I'm afraid? So can you tell us what you've discovered around some of those links?
Yeah, so this idea of the relationship or interplay between curiosity and anxiety has been in the research for quite some time. There was a seminal study done by Spielberger and Starr back in 1994 where they came to the conclusion that there was this interplay of curiosity and anxiety in a way that created a co-motivational system. So essentially, we needed both in order to explore. And then as we move through time, we see the different models of curiosity developed, one specifically around intellectual curiosity or epistemic curiosity that focuses on what is called deprivation sensitivity. So there's an absence of knowledge, which creates some kind of tension that catalyzes you into exploration. And then the newer models, for example, by Todd Kashtan, have this facet of stress tolerance that is about managing that anxiety and stress along the way. And essentially what's found in the research and what I saw in my study and what I continue to see today when I'm working with clients is that we have this immediate cognitive appraisal that happens right before we jump into our curiosity states. One is, oh, wow, this looks a bit different, unfamiliar. Maybe I have some kind of incongruency in my expectation, like something literally happened that I didn't expect. And two is, do I have what it takes to manage the stress along the way to navigate my exploration? And while the literature focuses on that initial cognitive appraisal, I see that we continue to have that appraisal because in our explorations, when we really activate our states of curiosity, we are moving away from familiar markers into unfamiliar territory, and we're looking for feedback. Often we conflate sometimes curiosity with flow states, and in flow states, you are looking for feedback, and often it can be negative feedback because you're trying out something new. And so there are ways that we can really support our curiosity states, but fundamentally, the anxiety part is what is going to be the way in which we express and sustain it. So how we manage that is how we're going to express and sustain those states.
Which is really interesting because we pick up in the book the importance of the environment around when you're being curious and the impact that a manager can have on that environment. And from what you're saying, if you're looking for that feedback and the environment gives you that negative feedback, it can stifle and kill off that curiosity. Is that what you found?
Yes. So a couple of things that I found, which was really interesting. One is when we can make the exploration more open. So when my study participants let go of preconceived notions, assumptions, biases, even adherence to social norms that they fundamentally could no longer prescribe to and really opened up the boundaries of the exploration, they actually felt liberated. When it was that they had to do an exploration in kind of confined parameters because they had an expectation that they had to be, quote, strategic, or there was an obligation to be curious in their roles, that's when their anxiety went up because they weren't able to really go into more of that intuitive exploration that was aligned with authentically who they are. And so when we talk about environments, we have to think about the kind of environments that we are creating that support, for example, psychological safety. I know this is why it's so wonderful that we have the pandemic has brought this focus on psychological safety because there's an intentionality to creating essentially learning zones, right? You're have to have an opportunity to first be included, to learn, and then to challenge and debate. And we need all of those things because the research shows that dissension is the birthplace of creativity. Dissension is the way to mitigate groupthink and to foster cognitive elaboration so we can start looking things at in completely different ways and reinterpret the boundaries of an issue together.
I love that. Dissension is the birthplace of creativity. I'd like to come back to something that you mentioned in passing there, Alison. So you mentioned Todd Kashdan's work and his model. Many of our listeners may not be familiar with that. So would you be able to give a very quick overview of the model and what the key points are that Todd talks about?
Sure. So, you know, Dr. Todd Kashdan out of George Mason University has been studying curiosity for decades, and his models have evolved over time. It started with a two-dimensional model, and now we're at a five-dimensional model. And that really speaks fundamentally to the multidimensionality of curiosity and that it is such a rich and complex phenomenon. And essentially, what the model is saying is that we need to start thinking about curiosity no longer as just this intellectual endeavor. So I really appreciate the research that's been done on epistemic curiosity, but I really believe that curiosity is a mental, emotional, and motivational system. It's a process. We almost have to think of curiosity as a verb, and that's what his model highlights. And essentially, if we distill the model down fundamentally, I've kind of condensed it into four facets, which is not knowing. So fundamentally, you have something you don't know, exploration, which can be joyous or not. Not all exploration is joyful, especially when it's connected to personal growth. And and the third is a level of openness. So whether that's open-mindedness or open to other people's ideas, there is a little bit of conflation in the research between openness experience. There is some level of openness, and then this fourth dimension of stress tolerance, of really being able to manage that anxiety and doubt along the way.
It's a great model. You also referred to biases, just to take you back to that. And as you know, in our Seven Seas, or Sailing the Seven Seas of Curiosity model, we talk about the importance of criticality and being aware of our biases. And what did you discover about our biases limiting our curiosity in your research?
Yeah, so what emerged was a bias like confirmation bias is really a form of self-protective curiosity. So you can quote explore, I'm putting my explore in quotation marks, but fundamentally you're doing it in a way that is not really looking for inputs that are contradictory, right? You're really just searching in a way that validates what you believe. You know, other cognitive biases that I see are, you know, there's obviously status quo bias, and there's framing bias, and there's champion bias. I mean, we have 182 biases, and fundamentally what these biases do is they shut down the facets of curiosity. And so the more we can be aware of these biases and have a language around them and recognize them in us and in our team, then we can actually put them out on the table. You know, it's kind of name it to tame it. And have a way to counteract those.
I love that. Name it to tame it. Tell me a little bit more about that, because I think I get it, but it's great.
So action bias is a really interesting discussion, especially with executives, because action bias has its place, right? If we're in paralysis by analysis, we need to make a decision and get going. But what I see with execs is that there's an overuse of action bias. There's a tendency to jump in, to fix it, to be quite reactive, and really not to take the time to unpack and to essentially oversimplify what is going on. And we need to recognize that we have these tendencies that really incite reactive behavior, right? And we go to our mental shortcuts. We just revert to past experience, which really is no longer relevant for things that we're solving in today. Or the other bias that I love that I see very often is binary bias. So I call that the tyranny of the or. So binary bias is about it has to be this or that. It's very black and white. There is no gray. And so if you just replace the or with an and, look at what happens in terms of the possibilities that start coming forward. And then your anxiety goes down and your stress tolerance goes up.
I love this, Alison. And the idea about how biases that we work with are so prevalent that we may not even recognize that they're there. as a human, but particularly as leaders in organizations, perhaps the context we're working in is almost encouraging these biases upon us. So would you agree with that? And what could our listeners do to become more curious leaders?
Yes. You know, the biases are just a part of who we are. I mean, we all have blind spots. We all crave certainty. You know, our brains are wired for certainty, but our minds are not. Our minds are how we can control where we place our intention and attention. And so for leaders, my first invitation is, you know, get clear on your values. Because what I'm seeing and emerging in the research is this relationship between curiosity and values. And know that there are some values that are anxiety inducing. I love the work of Shalom Schwartz, who created the integrated value system. And there are values that are about conservation, almost like self-preservation. So those are things like conformity, tradition, and security. I'm not saying that you can't have those values. I'm just saying look out for those and what those do. I have two executives in coaching right now where security is one of their values. And there is certain anxiety that is rising for certain areas of their development, but they have other beautiful values like courage and perseverance and autonomy. Those are anxiety reducing. But the idea with the values is that it's your internal compass. I mean, the research shows that values inform our behavior more than facts and knowledge, and they are going to inform how you're curious. The second is, you know, decide what kind of rules of engagement you are establishing with your team. Like, how are you normalizing experimentation, exploration, agile learning and agile failure? And what's the agreement among you and the team? Because that does take a level of sponsorship. Like, people have to know that you have their backs in order to experiment. And I would love to see us normalize experimentation, exploration. You know, there was a study done by MIT Sloan Management Review in the 2017, and it's still applicable today, that missing in leadership is creating the conditions for experimentation and executing by empowering people to think differently. That is so critical. And the third point is, what are you modeling? Are you modeling experimentation, or are you modeling conformity? Because conformity in the research has an inverse relationship to openness to change. So the more conformity, the lower the openness to change. The more conformity, the lower the well-being. We've seen that documented in the research. And so are you modeling, you know, error management, or are you modeling error avoidance? Because if you're in error avoidance, you're holding on to the status quo.
And we absolutely saw this and cited it in the book around the role of the manager can obviously hugely influence the engagement of the team, but the difference between a manager that the team considers favorable and a team considers unfavorable, where it had the greatest impact was on the dimensions of curiosity. And exactly as you're describing, it was experimentation, it was speaking up, it was offering diverse points of view, all of those aspects around curiosity, which if you want innovation, you want breakthroughs in how you do things, are essential to be there. But if the manager isn't role modeling, if the manager isn't encouraging, if people fail and are penalized for it, then that curiosity will die, and all of the positive attributes that come with it won't be there.
Yeah, true. And fundamentally what you're saying, Simon, is it's a practice. And part of the practice is coming back to the practice. This isn't a quick hack. I know we all love, I mean, I have some quick hacks for to enable, you know, curiosity-led conversations and things, but it is a practice. I mean, the research shows it takes energy, it takes effort, and you're going to fall off. And the invitation is to always come back.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book, The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
So you can't say you've got some quick hacks and not tell us more. So you'll have to share some of your quick hacks that our listeners can take to heart.
Yes, please.
Okay. So for those that love to drive the conversation, I invite you to say to yourself, wait, why am I talking? And let others go first and be more inclusive. You know, I talked before about the tyranny of the or. If you find yourself in that either or scenario, just replace the or with an and see what happens. Open-ended questions start with a what or a how. So we can weaponize questions. So if I said, Garrett, why'd you do it that way? That is not really a inviting question for discussion. But if I say, you know, Garrett, how would that work? That invites some unpacking. And we need to invite the unpacking. So let there be silent pauses. I often work on executive presence with executives, and they just love to fill in the silent pauses. It's like, no, let people process, let you collect yourself, and everybody process information differently. And I also really am asking people to stay away from why. Why can put people on the defensive? And so if you can go to, you know, how could that work? Or tell me more. Tell me more doesn't get overused because it doesn't get used enough. So just say, you know, if you're feeling triggered and you want, and you're just feeling like you want to jump in and react, just say, hey, can you tell me more about that? So, and the yes and instead of the no but.
Love those hacks. I've got a what question for you. What has been your most exciting discovery about curiosity?
For me is that it is so rich. I mean, it is so multi-layered. You know, when I was first starting the research, I was wondering, you know, could it be connected to the things that are documented? And was it just a function of the different models and that there's no consensus on the definition? And through my work, it's just fascinating to see that, yes, intuitively, it's connected to creativity and innovation. And you have wonderful researchers like Spencer Harrison who are doing such great work in terms of empirically supporting that. But it is, you know, it does make us innately human. And so I love to look at it through that humanistic lens of how it really helps us connect to ourselves and connect to each other. I don't think we spend enough time really understanding that curiosity is the doorway to getting to know ourselves better and to really getting to know each other better, and in a way that can lead to so many rich and interesting places.
When we were planning for this podcast with you, you mentioned quantum physics and, you know, as you know, I have a thing about quantum physics and harmonics and being also a musician, I'm really interested in things that harmonize and harmonics at all the multiple levels, even the subatomic. But your research made some really interesting connections. I'm really intrigued. Tell me more about, can you tell me more about your links with quantum physics or what your view is?
Yes, it's probably not a surprise that I ended up in research because in business development, we're putting disparate things together and research allows us to do the same thing. And it was early in my doctorate path that I read Dr. Dan Siegel's book, The Mindful Therapist, and he's a clinical professor of psychiatry out of the UCLA School of Medicine and head of the MindSight Institute. And he applied quantum physics to our mental processes in the way that actually separates the brain from the mind. And the mind is dynamic and that is constantly processing inputs and information. But what was so profound for me is his concept of the plane of possibility, where literally if you apply quantum physics, you always have an infinite number of possibilities available to you. And it is through our attention and intention that we whittle down those possibilities into probabilities, and then we actually experience one. we actually experience a probability, and that activates a new neural connection in our brain. And as you know from the research, we can make new neural connections until the day we die. We can constantly do that and constantly expand our thought action repertoire. But our habit is to have habitual patterns of behavior. And so we are actually probably living in the plateau of probabilities, where we are just in same groove. And so it is with our curiosity that we can return again and again to the plane of possibility. And because of the facets of not knowing, exploration, openness, and stress tolerance, we move back and forth between going through possibility to probability to experience, back to possibility, probability, and experience again and again. And so that is how I see the relationship.
It's a very nice mental framework, Alison, that, because it makes me think of almost like a daily mm-hmm. reminder that we can have to say, I'm feeling stressed, or I'm feeling closed, or I don't know what to do next. And then just remind ourselves that we can go back to, as you say, that plane of possibility
yeah. yes.
and start again and yeah. try something
it's
new.
It's like every time you look at the horizon out on the ocean, it can go in any direction. Right? A wave can take you any direction. I think that's also why I gravitated towards both yoga and surfing. It's always a practice. You know, you can always get thrown off the board or thrown off a pose, and then you have to come back to it.
And one informs mm-hmm. the other, right? As you get better at yoga, I imagine you get better at surfing as well.
Yes, yes.
Both areas I need to work on. So you've worked, Alison, with lots of.
Sorry, is that your surfing? You're talking about surfing.
I definitely need to work on my surfing, and I think I very much need to work on my yoga as well. You've worked with lots of individuals and companies, Alison. So I'd love to hear a story or an example where you've seen a very positive or significant impact of curiosity, either on one of those individuals or on an organization you've worked with. Is there a story you can share?
Sure. So one experience comes to mind that I was working with a engineering leadership team. And they were a new leadership team, and their manager had come to me and saying, you know, we need to evolve, we need to excel in our organization, and they're just not open to new ideas, they're not challenging, we seem to be playing it pretty safe, and some other things and we really need to gel as a team. I mean, there was like a number of things, and while it sounds like, oh, that's a lot to do, it's all interrelated. And fundamentally, you know, what was at the bottom is they just wanted to evolve in a way where they could start have better collaboration, higher levels of experimentation, and higher levels of really seeing what they could find in terms of agile experimentation and iteration. Mm-hmm. And we worked on themselves first, on their facets of curiosity, how they were curious as individuals, what self-narratives were getting in the way. You know, so much of our curiosity is tied to our self-concept of who we fundamentally believe we are in this world. And there are narratives that go along with that. And then we focused on their team values, what they really want to stand for as a team. What was the behavior they wanted to have in their team? And we worked, I introduced them to my model that I developed based on my research, the Expert Explorer framework. So we integrated that into them. And then they started practicing. They started practicing being the explorer. They started practicing modeling their values. And then we also integrated the language around cognitive biases. They taught those to their team. And it was a series of that kind of, I call it a practicum, because there's real world practice. They actually had to go and do and come back and debrief and try again. So there was the element of practice. And we used their pulse survey data to measure the results, and their innovation score, leadership, team vision and direction score, and organization career growth scores all went up anywhere from 8 to 17%.
Wow. That's brilliant.
And those are definitely things people will, I'm sure, relate to, of, you know, better collaboration, greater willingness to experiment. So, yeah, it's great to know that curiosity helped to address that.
Our definition of curiosity is that it is an attitude of wonder with a spirit of exploration. And, you know, the more we talk about it, the more we talk to people like you and so many others, the more that reinforces with me that this is, we're on the track. It's connected to action. It's connected to doing. I'm fascinated by your explorer model. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So expert explorer model is rooted in really a mindset. And I'm not saying that you can't have expertise in your domain. I mean, we want people to have a level of competency in their role and experience and all those things that they can bring to the table for their roles. I mean, people are incredibly talented and we want to make use of those. What I'm saying is that when we show up as the expert, this is when, and we all do it, this is when we're leaning in to prove we're right. It's my agenda. It's extremely defensive. It's about me. It's very informed by assumptions and our biases. There is no reflection going on. And we're staying relatively within familiar parameters or familiar territory. The explorer, on the other hand, is really the growth mindset in action. It's leaning in to help get it right. It's listening with the intention that what I hear changes what I do, just the intention. So I'm not listening to fix or to win. It's seeking the unknown. It's asking open-ended questions. And it's being receptive to the inputs, no matter what they are. So it's great to be inquisitive, but if you're not open, that's not going to do us any good. And the explorer, you know, is challenging the status quo. And there is a great deal of reflection, not just in terms of the team, what's going well, what's not going well, but with yourself. How am I showing up? Oh, I didn't show up so great today. Why is that? And so there are those constant cycles of, you know, assessment, action, accountability going on with the explorer.
Alison, speaking of definitions, and I love that one of the explorer, we have our definition of curiosity. And we're curious, how would you define curiosity?
So my definition is not pithy, like yours is very rich and concise. And that's because, you know, it's probably my bias. I want to make sure I get everything in there. So my definition is the self-directed seeking, exploration, and immersion into the unfamiliar, new, ambiguous, and complex.
Yeah, very nice. I like that very much. And it has, to be honest, it echoes and aligns with some of the thinking that we have there about curiosity, both being this state of wondering, but also being in the real world, experimenting and exploring.
So I
see some overlaps there.
Yeah. And because also, Paul, those kind of situations have the highest potential to give us new information and new experiences. And that's what we need.
What are you personally most curious about at the moment?
At the moment, I am curious about how do we really transcend our self narratives to live authentically, and because I think we each have different perspectives of what that means, and how do we have the tools and the engagement in our world, so we have curiosity about us, others, and the world, in the way that we can evolve and show up how we really conceive or know that we can. I'm just always fascinated how people's journeys evolve, and how does somebody, you know, become on a world stage and somebody else doesn't. You know, it's just really remarkable to me about our self narratives are so powerful And I love that. And I want us to transcend them. I want to transcend my own. I have them all the time too. I mean, you know, we're just because I do the work and I coach doesn't mean I'm not having them, you know.
Well, we're all work in progress, right? But, yes. But I love this idea of,
speak for yourself.
Well, if I very much am, no. I feel I'm in chapter one. I love this idea of having a transcending narrative. And particularly at the moment, in the world where we're kind of, are we yet coming out of this pandemic? You know, what are the new narratives that are going to shape, you know, what the next decade or so is going to hold for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have such an opportunity to change our narratives for the better, to be a more inclusive world. You know, I was on another podcast and somebody asked me my feelings about social media. You know, it's wonderful in one respect, you know, you get to have that wonder and see other things going on. And then the flip side of that is it can be terribly polarizing. And how do we transcend that polarization really in the service of the higher good? I think we have quite a bit of work to do, but certainly we have the tools within us, and one of them is our meta skill of curiosity.
Are there any questions you may have for us?
Yes. So what's next in terms of the curiosity work that you are doing?
Ah, Simon.
what a great question. lots to come. So there will be a second edition. So we will update that at some point over the next few months with some of the great content from podcasts such as this. So that's to come. We've also been doing a lot of work with Ashridge Holt Business School around a curiosity diagnostic as well. Mm. So how do we measure curiosity in organizations? Recognizing, as you referenced earlier, there's a number already of personal curiosity diagnostics out there. We've had Dr. Diane Hamilton on the show who has one that measures the barriers to curiosity as an example. But we couldn't find anything that really covered how you measure curiosity within an organization. And so, yeah, the last 6 to 12 months, we've been working together with Ashridge to develop that. We're just moving into a beta stage at the moment, and that will be something that will be coming a little later in the year as well. And hopefully that will give organizations a better view on you know, how curious they are. And you know, across our 7Cs model, you know, the different dimensions that could then be worked on in order to further develop curiosity. So that's a very exciting next step as well.
It's
fascinating.
And I love that you guys recognize just how multifaceted curiosity is. I mean, that's what your 7Cs model really underscores, the complexity, and that it is a process. And I think we also have to be careful of oversimplifying the barriers as well, because we can have fear as a barrier, but fundamentally, what is that rooted to? That's rooted to our self-concept and our ego. Right. So being able to dive in deeper and underneath the layers and not just put the band-aids on the symptoms.
That's right. One of the fascinating things that I hadn't expected is that our research is taking us into conversations with heads of learning and COOs in organizations who are asking, how do we create an infrastructure that enables curiosity within the workplace? And all of a sudden, talk about, you know, a plane of opportunity or possibility. We're having conversations which are taking us into the future of learning, the future specifically of adaptive learning. That takes us into questions of learning in the flow of work, or work is learning and learning is work. And how can we enable a future infrastructure in which information is flowed into our work in a way that is non-invasive, but that is complementary to our work, that sort of sits in the periphery and enables our curiosity to keep on moving us forward. And then that, in order to get there, which is, you know, fairly significant number of steps into the future, you have to have conversations about feedback mechanisms, about the data that is being harvested and being fed back, about people's context. And then you have conversations about what are the IT platforms and infrastructure requirements that are going to allow us to head in that direction, so that we can create rather than a kind of rote learning system, but an adaptive learning system that is, tuned to the contextual reality of an individual in time. So lots of amazing directions we're going.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And technology can be such a wonderful enabler. Certainly with workplace automation, we know that the skills are rapidly changing, but fundamentally we're automating things that we don't want to do. And then that's going to mean that we have to be even more sophisticated in our social, mental, and emotional agility and in our thinking and in our collaboration. Like, the human side of work doesn't go away. It actually becomes more emphasized.
Absolutely. So we're nearing the end of our time together, Alison. We've covered some fantastic topics. So learning how being more curious can make our exploration more open, how people feel more liberated when they're curious. And if we confine people's curiosity, then it can create anxiety. I loved your quote around dissension is the birthplace of creativity. We've learned more about the relationship between curiosity and anxiety. You took us through the Kashdan model, so understanding the dimensions of curiosity around not knowing, around exploration that can be joyous or not, openness, open-mindedness, and open to new experiences, and stress tolerance. Went through the whole piece around biases and understanding our action biases and paralysis by analysis and some of our others. And then your five quick hacks as well.
Hacks.
So
fabulous.
Yes, the Alison's quick hacks. Yes. So for those who drive conversations, wait, the tyranny of or. So replace or with an and. Open-minded questions. So use what or how and avoid using why. Invites people to unpack things more. Get comfortable with silent pauses, let there be silent pauses. And then if you get triggered, use tell me more, or even I'm curious, tell me more. And then learning also around the plane of possibilities and how curiosity can take us to that plane of possibility and explore some of those infinite possibilities and move from possibility to probability to experience and that loop back again. So and then, of course, not forgetting your expert and explorer model as well, and the benefits of having an open mindset or growth mindset, and not listening to fix or win. So
it's a lot.
A rich conversation.
Amazing.
It is a lot.
So rich.
But if I
thank you.
if I put you on the spot though, Alison, and said, if you had to leave our listeners with one thing from our conversation today, what would be the most important aspect of what we've covered for you?
Curiosity is innately human. And as humans, we fundamentally want to be of value, be valued, and be connected. And it is, and so the question is not if we are curious, but how we are curious because of those facets. And how we each are curious is going to be different and of value.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Alison.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun to be with you, Simon, Paul, and Garrick. And congratulations again on your success. And I look forward to learning from each other.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Thank you,
Alison. Such a brilliant
Thank
conversation.
You.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing all your ideas and research with us. So you've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're always curious to hear from you. If you think there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what you've learned from it, so others can benefit as well. We always appreciate hearing our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. So join us today using hashtag Curious Advantage. If you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today, the Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide. Order your copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.